Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the Long Shot Podcast, brought to you by 342 Productions. I'm your host, Duncan Robinson, as always, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Davis Reed. Davis, how are we doing?
I'm so great. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, we're coming off a fantastic weekend, a celebration of love and life. My sister got married this past weekend on Saturday. Davis somehow snagged himself an invite. I'm still not entirely sure how. No, obviously Davis is close with our entire family, so made an appearance. And, you know, we had a great time.
It was fantastic. We were planning on getting an in-person interview in for this week's episode. That did not happen, but we got Tommy for an awesome conversation. But the reason we did not get the in-person interview in is because you gave an amazing speech at the wedding in the ceremony. You were actually kind of like the focal point of the ceremony, which I thought was a little selfish on your part, but you gave a great speech. And so you were honing that speech and practicing it on Saturday when we were going to do this interview. But you did crush it. So I just wanted to give you your flowers on this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Could have been a little bit better. You know, I would actually more so appreciate some constructive criticism. I think that that would actually be better for me than just kind of, you know, showering me with praise. What do you got?
I do have some constructive criticism. You had some emotions creeping up during the speech, which makes sense. You were speaking at your older sister's wedding, and I thought you really fought them. I thought you really repressed the emotion. I thought if you let it go and maybe even shed a tear or two, it would have really dialed up the emotion from the crowd and would have helped the scene a little bit. I thought you fought it a little too hard.
So before that, there's like headlines going everywhere saying that I was like bawling. I did get a little bit emotional. Want to get out in front of that. You know, my older sister is, you know, she's my older sister. She's one of the best human beings I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. And the fact that she has found, you know, everlasting love is special. And then, of course, I'm tasked to speak to that. I mean, that's a challenge in and of itself. I don't consider myself an overly emotional person. In fact, I've actually gotten criticism for actively repressing my emotion.
Yeah, you feel nothing.
Yeah, and not sharing. But I will say, like, in this moment, it was kind of like an avalanche. It was kind of like one of those things where it's like, gosh, like, what is that feeling? Like, I'm feeling feelings, you know? It was like that. It was like a weird moment of like existential crisis of like, oh, so that's what it feels like to be emotional.
To be alive.
Yeah. Anyways, we had a great weekend. It was a ton of fun. There was a video going around on our social media of some just classic two-on-two up at the school, the local elementary school. And that was a great time. Davis and I came away with a win, which, you know, if you know anything about those two teams, Davis and Duncan versus Chris and Harry, it's a bitter, bitter rivalry that goes all the way back. And it was just great to know that the long shot duo secured the latest chapter of that matchup.
How's the saying go? The most important game was the last one, or maybe, you know, whatever, when you're talking about a series. We are on top, and we're going to remain on top until they knock us off that mountain, which I don't see happening anytime soon. Yeah, this game was, it took place on the Duncan Robinson court, which we documented over the weekend on social media. But your elementary school dedicated the outdoor playground to you, which is an amazing honor. The school's right across the street from your mother's house, so we made sure to go check it out. I will say, it was almost like Field of Dreams. You know how players just start showing up out of the cornfield? That's kind of how it was with the fans when we were playing. It's like, before I knew it, 20 minutes in, it was like there was 15 people from the community just watching. I think that's the impact that you have on them. They get wind. I don't even know how. Maybe there's like a neighborhood group thread, but they get wind that Duncan Robinson has graced his own basketball court. And then before you know it, it's like standing room only.
Probably giving me a little too much credit. But I mean, it's a small, tight-knit community. So as you can probably imagine, word travels pretty quickly. So, you know, and not to mention, it's like an elementary school. So when the four of us, you know, we're not exactly normal looking or like par for the course of who's usually playing on there. I mean, sure. I'm obviously tall, but then our other buddy, Chris, who was a Division I college basketball player turned what is he? Is it, that's not bodybuilding. What is it?
It's fitness trainer slash body builder.
He participates in like physique competitions and he is massive.
Larger than any human should be.
Yeah. So I think when you like see that visually, you're like, oh, wow, something's going on here. Even if you don't exactly know me or whatever, like you're just kind of like appalled by the fact that all of these grown individuals are playing on this children's court. But we had a ton of fun. It was a blast. The whole weekend was a great time. But yeah, you know, now I'm back in Miami. I'm here for the foreseeable future outside of a quick trip to Ann Arbor, which I'm taking this weekend to take in a Michigan football game. Go Blue as always. But other than that, I'm back in Miami gearing up for a big season.
Yeah, exciting for you to be back there. Exciting that the season's around the corner. One more quick thing on your impact in New Hampshire. I had someone come up to me at your sister's wedding, and they started talking about you, and they were talking about your impact on their kids. It was a mother. She was talking about the impact on her kids who are from Newcastle, from your area. And she said, my son and all his friends now think they can go pro because of Duncan. It's like, they're all in Little League and they want to play in the MLB because of Duncan. And it struck me. I just thought it was really special. I mean, your elementary school you went to, you had what, four kids in your class, I think?
Yeah, I was one of four.
It's not a massive community. Like you said, it's a tight-knit community. But your impact on people, I mean, it was very evident at the wedding. Just that the way that people viewed you, I just thought was really special. I think you've earned that. But it was, you know, it was really cool for me to see. I hadn't been boots on the ground like that and seen your presence in Newcastle, New Hampshire recently. But boy, is it different than 2013 when we were, you know, high school kids and no one really cared who you were.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot has changed since 2013. Probably most notably your flourishing podcasting career because you have really continued your meteoric rise to stardom as basically Joe Rogan's counterpart and opposition. Yeah. So let's all just take a moment to celebrate that, how far Davis has come. All right. Well, we want to get right to it with Tommy because we have a fun conversation. I know, Dave, you wanted to touch on a long shot feature though. So what do we got?
Yeah, we're going to skip our Reddit question of the week this week. Apologies. But I do have to shout out my cousin, Reed Sennett. This week's long shot feature, third string quarterback for the Dolphins, was on the practice squad last year. But this dude is the definition of an underdog, definition of a long shot. Dunk played 1 year of high school football, 1 year, his senior year. That he was on the bench before that, but played well enough to get a spot at the University of San Diego. That's a really storied program, though, out there in the WCC. So they had some stud quarterbacks coming in. My cousin didn't play there until his senior year. So played 1 year of high school football, then got to play 1 year of college football. But he balled out his senior year at San Diego. They won the conference, played well enough to generate some interest in the NFL, got signed to the Buccaneers practice squad before last season, but got cut, and then got picked up by the Dolphins, was their practice squad quarterback. No preseason last year because of COVID. So he didn't really get a chance to play. Different preseason. So he didn't really get any reps until this past week. He got his first ever start in the final preseason game for the Dolphins and just absolutely balled out. Threw for 343 yards, two touchdowns, led a late game comeback, was capped off by a 4th-and-15 Hail Mary to win the game, Dunk. I don't know if you saw the highlight. It made its rounds on social media. But talk about maximizing your opportunities. This guy gets 1 year of high school, maximizes opportunity. 1 year of college, maximizes opportunity. And then gets one chance in the preseason to play a full game and just absolutely maximizes his opportunity. So got to give him a shout out. Shout out to Reed. Only good things coming for him in his football career.
Love the personal touch on this week's long shot feature. Reed's a fantastic human being. I texted him after seeing it. And he tried to come at me with some sort of like, oh, lucky, blah, blah. I'm like, no. You create and make your own luck. And yes, you've earned those opportunities and you've earned the fact that you've made the most of them. I hope that Reed is a staple moving forward in South Florida. And the beautiful thing is, even if he's not, he's going to have an NFL career. And I believe that wholeheartedly. So shout out to Reed. He's also a weekly listener. And, you know, obviously we have a soft spot for those as well.
Yeah, of course.
Anyways, fantastic long shot feature. Dial in for a fantastic conversation with Tommy Alter. He's a mysterious guy. We get right down to the bottom of it. You know, kind of unearth some of his previous occupations as well as kind of how he moves in his different circles. But I think you guys will enjoy this one. Obviously a fun conversation considering we know him well. So yeah, stay tuned for Tommy Alter. Hello and welcome back in to the Long Shot Podcast. We have an incredibly special guest here with us today. Probably familiar to most of you, but maybe not. We have Tommy Alter with us, co-host of The Old Man and the Three, podcasting legend. Tommy, welcome to The Long Shot.
What's up, guys? It's great to be on with my coworkers. Two of my favorite people.
Is it coworkers? Because we were kind of under the impression that you and JJ are our bosses.
No, we're coworkers/collaborators. I would say we're definitely not your boss.
I like that. I like collaborators. That I can run.
Imagine if I came on here and I was like, "You guys work for us."
Well, hold on. I mean, you've never given us that type of tone. You've given us a ton of creative control, which I'm incredibly appreciative of. But there are also like check-ins. So let's not act like you're not a superior in this workspace, because you are.
I would say that there are check-ins in terms of making sure that everything is running smoothly on the stuff that we are working on together. But I will say this. I mean, we can get into the history of the show later on. You guys have fucking built a machine in like 5 months. Like, you don't need, like, I don't know if this is just Davis. So here's the funny thing. When Duncan
told me, it's all Davis. It's all Davis.
No, don't do this.
When we started this idea for the show, I think we first talked about it pre-COVID when we did the pod. We did the pod with Jimmy in Miami and then, or in New Orleans when you guys were in New Orleans, and then you came on, and then we started talking about it, and then we kept talking about it, and then once the bubble happened, it just became like, oh, this is a thing we should actually do. When Duncan called me and was like, my boy is going to, and we've talked about this in private, my boy is going to come on the show, I'm like, of course, cool, because like, that's how I ended up with JJ. What am I going to be like? No. But you never know what that means. Like, we all know a bunch of NBA players who have a bunch of shithead friends, and like, it doesn't always work out well for this. Davis is a monster, dude. Davis is doing all the social media. Davis was hosting that thing in Vegas. Like, honestly, Duncan is like the sideshow on his own show. I actually think it is a, you cast him well, man.
No,
I don't want to do this.
We've covered that. I am Davis's sidekick. This is Davis's show. This is the long shot long with shot. Davis, Davis. And I Reed. Just kind of happen to be, you know, next to him in the fine print, Duncan
That's what
Robinson.
Happens. That's
He's
what
taken
happens.
Over. But I think you're actually downplaying, and maybe I'm wrong, but let's rehash this. I think you're downplaying a little bit the hesitation that you had when I came
I
to you
say.
And I was like, hey, I want to do it with a friend of mine. And I think it was reasonable, because I think you understood the circumstances and you didn't have an idea of what Davis could ultimately be. I will say I take full credit for being an incredible talent evaluator, because
yeah,
I
dude,
saw it
you're
from,
like,
from early on. No, but I think that there was
Red
an
Auerbach.
Initial there was an initial pushback there of like, all right, like, did we maybe make a mistake that like this guy's just going to grab his boy and then they're just going to like, you know, just chop it up here for every episode?
Well, there was never a point, because I remember I talked about it with JJ right afterwards. There was never a point where I was like, this is a bad idea. But I did say to you, I said, we should try it. I wasn't like, oh, let's definitely do that. I was like, we should try it. Where I did understand, and this was partially from just meeting Davis, but also thinking about it more, where I did understand that it was a good idea, and where I was confident that it was going to work even before we started, is I remember we had the conversation, like, what I've basically realized with podcasts in general, which is not a, this is not exactly some like bold, brilliant statement. It's pretty much common sense, is the most important thing is for the host to be comfortable and to have a comfort level with who they're talking to and what they're talking about. And I knew basically like with your guys' history that you were going to have good content on stuff that had nothing. My only concern with player podcasts in general, and we have the same problem, you know, that you guys have. We've been doing it for longer, so we've learned a few tricks. But like, if you're relying on guests, you are setting yourself up for failure because the NBA schedule is a monster, and the guys are, you know, nice people, but they can be unreliable, and to put it mildly. And so basically, like, we had to create an ecosystem that allowed you to be comfortable where you're like, I can talk about stuff, you know, and I don't have to rely on having Jimmy or Bam on every episode because they're not coming on every week. And it's really hard to talk solo. Like, you got to be like a real talent to be able to do that. And so it's like, if we can figure out someone you can talk to all the time, like, that's the show. And then everything else is like additive.
Well, I also think, first of all, I hate the start that this podcast is off to, that we're just
it's all about you, Dave. All about you.
What we've also found, Tommy, is what plays the best is when we just shit on Duncan. And so having me here allows us to do that every episode. Like, he's not going to sit here and be self-deprecating about himself.
Yeah,
so
of course not.
What I found is my role especially is just to come
now,
on here.
Especially now, after this summer.
Yeah, exactly. So I just come on here and I just make fun of him every week. And that's the best part for me.
That's it.
Well, you mentioned scheduling, and, you know, Tommy, we take a lot of pride in being fully transparent with our community. So I think that it's necessary for me to kind of paint a picture of how this episode came about.
Yeah.
All right. So full disclosure, we had a couple of great guests lined up. You know what? Stuff happens.
At least three guests.
They had to cancel. One of them was a blunder on our behalf. I'll take that one on the chin. That one's on me. But then, you know, we have the idea early on in this week, you know, let's do a little pod collaboration. You talked about, you know, it being collaborative earlier. Let's get the old man and the three, the long shot, on one episode together. So we have a little group chat. I fire off a text, like, let's get it popping. And it was well received. You know, you were in. You gave a very clear, concise time of like, this is when I'm available. JJ said he was in, gave a window with like, and then I kind of like backed his way out of it also. And as soon as he said like, oh yeah, it's kind of like weather permitting, whether or not I can be there from 2 to 3.
You should have known.
It was fishy right then because he gave himself an out. And, you know, you talk about NBA players and their schedules, you know, and of course, here we are. It's just the three of us. I don't want to throw JJ too far under the bus, but I also would not be being fully honest with our community if I said that he wasn't supposed to.
I was going
to
say you had three guests, not counting your coworker.
Right.
That's right.
Flaked on you in this week. I will say this about Duncan. Duncan has been on OM3, OG correspondent. Been on however many times, 10 times, whatever it is. Duncan is by far our most reliable guest, player or non-player. If Duncan says he's coming on at 5 p.m., this could be 5 p.m. like the day after like game 3 of the finals. And he's like, oh, 5:01, there's Duncan.
But so much of that, so much of that has been created by the fact that I now have to deal with scheduling people. So I have a certain amount of empathy for what goes into that. So if I say I'm going to be there at a time, I do my hardest to be punctual. But anyway, so because JJ was out, he was kind of a late scratch. We're talking legitimately 30 minutes before, you know, we're going to do this. Davis and I were going back and forth, and we thought it was an incredible opportunity to just put you on the hot seat.
Yes.
I love it.
Like, just fully. And you know, I'll be honest with you. You're a pretty mysterious guy. You know, Yeah. You sit back. You know, you kind of like you wear hats. No one really knows exactly. Maybe like, you know, YouTube's helped a little bit, but no one
Davis
really
wears
knows.
Hats.
Yeah, Tommy, you wear hats, man. It's weird.
But you like you seamlessly, you know, add a very insightful comment or question to a podcast episode, but you never, like, you do a great job, and this is all complimentary, you do a great job of, like, navigating it, and the attention is very rarely ever on you. So we really want to make this episode all about you. As uncomfortable as that will probably make you, that's the point of this episode.
Yes.
I love it. It doesn't make me uncomfortable at all. I will say, though, I don't like people every once in a while will ask me to do shows and stuff like that. And then I usually say no, because I basically think that it, I think some of the stuff that we do with our company, you know, we do with our shows and everything like that. First of all, it's better for us to do it on our show. You know what I mean? Not that I'm like, you know, would, if my friend is like, can you come on? Of course I'm going to be like, yeah, but I don't think like giving a million, like, you know, interviews about yourself and stuff like that is generally like the best form. I think that sometimes it's better to be a little mysterious is good. But I also, like, some people say this to me sometimes and I don't really understand why I'm that mysterious, because nothing is that secretive. You know what I mean? Like, everything that I do is, I'm fairly transparent about. I just do a lot of different shit, you know? And so sometimes people are like, why is he there? Why is he there? And I'm like, I don't know. Just keep it moving.
Right. I don't think the mysterious thing is a shtick. And obviously, as I've gotten to know you, you know, I realize how genuine of a person you are. I think Jason, our video guy, summed it up beautifully in that he said he considers you a very close friend and he still knows like very little about you. So I don't think it's necessarily intentional, but like,
where is Jason? Is Jason on this recording?
Jason
right now?
Was supposed to be on it.
That motherfucker.
He also bailed. But like, you know, you're showing up in like pictures with Kevin Love and Brad Beal, and you're involved in the shop and HBO. You're doing all these things. Like, tell the people just a little bit about what it is you do, how you kind of came to be, I don't want to say socialite, because I think that's like undercutting like the real value that you're bringing, but like, you are like kind of a prominent fixture in these kind of like, you know, big networking circles.
Are you talking about in basketball or in other stuff?
I just want everything, all encapsulating. Yeah,
that's like life. A deep question. It's like a big question.
It's almost like, it's,
you gotta like be a little more specific than that. I don't know.
It's almost like if there was a Wikipedia page being made about you, what would be like?
All right, headlines? I'll give it in 60 seconds.
Yes,
I'll give it. Give it in 60 seconds. I started working. I'm not gonna give the whole life story, but I got into working in TV at a sort of low level. In 2014, I was working at Comedy Central. From that, I met Bill Simmons. I became close with Bill. When Bill went over to HBO, I went with him, and we sort of built out the HBO stuff together, the doc stuff, some of the stuff with The Ringer together. While that was happening, these guys, Diz and Miro, who I tried to work with when I was at my previous job, they wanted to start a new show. They were really good friends of mine in New York. So I'm like, okay, let's do this. This would be fun. That was happening in New York. Bill was happening in LA. I built out the show with them. We did it for Vice for a couple of years and it became like pretty popular there. Eventually now it's on Showtime. What I basically realized is in the basketball world, because at that point I met JJ in LA right after I moved out. So I met him in like 2014 or something like that when he was still playing for the Clippers. What I basically realized was the basketball world is extremely small. And a lot of people in it came from other fields, whether it be music or other parts of culture or things like that. And I actually knew a lot of them because I was always like a basketball fan, but it wasn't a thing that I wanted to work in or anything like that. I basically realized I knew a lot of them from other spaces already. Like, I knew Rich Kleiman, who works with KD. Rich used to manage artists. And so I was working in different music spaces. And so like he managed J. Cole, he managed Wale, he worked with Meek Mill, he worked with all these different guys. And so like when I realized that like Kevin's business partner was that rich, I'm like, oh shit, like this is a guy that I already know. It's the same thing with Maverick and Rich Paul and those guys. And basically you realize that everything is very interconnected, which can be like intimidating for people sometimes, but I actually don't think it's a bad thing. I think it makes it easier in a way. I mean, one thing, we talk about this on our show a lot. Obviously, we talked about it with Dame because he's the most ultimate example of this. It's like a lot of NBA players like want to be rappers and rappers want to be NBA players. And it's kind of funny, but it also kind of makes this make sense, which is that these two worlds are sort of interwoven. And so I just became kind of like well-versed in those worlds. And then from that, you know, a bunch of other shows have sort of spun out of that. And some of them have been, you know, bigger shows. Some of them have been kind of like one-off specials and things like that. And so, you know, before JJ and I were doing the pod stuff, I just had this basically TV business where I was just producing a bunch of different TV shows. And, you know, I still have that going now. Obviously, when we started 342 last year, that's kind of taken precedent. But one of the things, even with 342, and we've talked about this, you guys have talked about it with the two of us is like, we really have a focus on audio. I think that we're not trying to be competitive with, you know, some of these other companies that are doing, you know, big movies and big TV shows and stuff like that. It's like, Duncan, you got to play for the next however many years. You know what I mean? So we have to be realistic about like what you're going to do. Now, you may want to do a one-off docuseries or something like that, which isn't a challenge, but like, there's no world where you're going to be able to host your own TV show because you're not going to have time. And so that's just from a production standpoint. The nice thing that makes podcasting, you know, just sort of interesting, both for people like you guys, but then also like, I don't know if you follow the show, Brainless, that like Jason Bateman and those guys do. I think it's called Smartless, maybe, whatever it's called. It's a good show. And that's another sort of good example of like, those guys are working actors and they can still do this. Those guys could not host a talk show, like with their schedule. Like the amount of time that it takes to host a talk show is just impossible versus hosting a podcast. And so I found in this particular space that there's a lot of lanes to basically like do this with different interesting people because of the, you know, understanding what the production requirements require for something like this versus something like television. I don't know if that answers the question at all.
No, that answered it beautifully. I want to start by saying you kind of downplayed that because you're kind of connected into both worlds, that the connections and networking kind of happens naturally. I think you deserve a ton of credit for also making it happen. And I've experienced that, you know, when Victor Oladipo first got to Miami, I remember you texting me saying that you were friends, and I brought up your name to him. And the first thing he said is, oh man, Tommy's great. Like, that guy knows everybody. And
we've done a lot of stuff.
But I don't think that just happens by accident. Like, I think that you have to have a certain level of being intentional in order for, and you have to be a likable guy, which obviously you
are. That's true. I mean, I'll give you an example with Vic. Like, you know, I met him in first year he got to Indy. I met him in LA or something like that. We just sort of got introduced somewhere. He's just such a nice guy. I mean, he'll come on your show at some point, I'm sure, when he's a little
more
healthy.
We're working on that.
Yeah, he'll be going to be great. And he's going to be a great guest and everything like that. But like, this is an example of the kind of thing, to your point about like putting stuff together, that like I did do with him, which was the best way to describe it for me is I just like sort of creating cool moments if I can. And they don't always have to have a specific purpose. You know, they definitely don't have to have a financial purpose, but they also don't have to have a thing where it's like, I'm going to be splashing, like I did this, da da da. So like, we had one of the guys that used to love Deezy Samiro when it was on Vice, he was one of the first sort of like celebrity fans of the show, was Chadwick Boseman, RIP. He's a great dude, just like super nice, super down to earth guy. And he would basically just like smoke weed and watch the show. And he became like a super fan. And so he was in New York, he would come by the show, he'd either come on the show or he'd just sort of come and hang. And so I got to know him then. And I wasn't like super tight with him, but I definitely, you know, had a relationship with him. And so when Black Panther came out, which I believe was 2018, Vic was doing the dunk contest that year. And he's obviously Nigerian. You know, we had gone to see the movie earlier that week or something like that in New York. It was me and him and a couple of his friends or whatever. And he loved the movie. And so, like, I think the dunk contest was like that Saturday, or the All-Star game was that Saturday or Sunday. And it was like Tuesday of that week. And I was like, at dinner, I was like, have you thought about what you're going to do with the dunk contest? He's like, no, not really. Like, I'm just going to wing it. I'm like, okay. Like, I've never been in a dunk contest, but that probably seems like you should, you know, figure it out. But so we were just talking about it. And I think it was his idea. I'm not taking credit for the idea, but he was like, what if we do something that was like Black Panther related or whatever it is? I'm like, oh, that would actually be cool. You know, I know Chadwick a bit, like, let me see if that's the kind of thing that he would want to do. And so I hit him up and he was like, he was a big sports fan. He's like 100%. And so then Disney had to get involved, and they were kind of, you know, they kind of made it their own thing in its own way. But it was sort of like, what he ended up doing was Chadwick was at the game, he was sitting courtside, and Vic put on the mask and he did the dunk or whatever. And then they became sort of friends afterwards. And it was like, that kind of thing is like, it's a small thing. It isn't that big of a, it's not a big moment by any means, but it also is kind of cool to be around. And my thing is basically like, it's like, you guys are like this too. It's like, you have a lot of these friends in different worlds. Like, if you have friends and you can like put somebody on in some way, you're never going to be like sorry that you did it. You know, you're always going to be like, oh, that's like a nice thing. And it didn't, you know, he didn't win the dunk contest, so it's not like he got paid out of it, but it was just it was kind of a moment, and it was cool, and he was happy about it. You know, Chadwick was happy about it. The movie studio was happy about it. So that's a good example of just kind of like putting stuff together a little bit.
I mean, I think it boils down, and not to oversimplify what it is you do, but like in my experience with you, you're like a dot connector. You make connections. You've done that with me a handful of times, which I'm appreciative of. Davis, I just want to make sure you're over there taking notes in some capacity.
Davis is good. Davis, I've talked to Davis about this. This will be, like, the thing is, Davis is just getting into this. Like, think about, like, I've had such a head start in being in these different places and everything like that. Like, both the two of you guys are like, this is like the first inning for you in doing this. And like, if we check back in a year, I'm going to be like, there's going to be all kinds of crazy deals that you two have like concocted. And I'm going to be like, I told them on that podcast that this was going to happen, and it's going to happen.
Tommy deserves all credit. Yeah, no, he's laying the blueprint. Like you said, we've already been to some coffee dates, some dinners where he's introducing us to his network. I'm very thankful for that. I want to get back to you. I feel like we're deflecting on your story. This podcast is about you,
Tommy. You guys, you're hosting it, man. I'm just along for the ride.
The switch you made, so you know, you beat around the bush a little bit, but you give us your background in producing shows, and you're in TV, and then you make the switch from being behind the scenes to being a face of a podcast. You're on it every day, your face and your voice. What's that transition like? Because I, thinking personally, you know, you and I play very similar roles on our shows, respectively. That switch from, and I wasn't in the space, you were, but all of a sudden, your face is, you know, in front of millions and millions and millions of people, you know, because we have so many listeners.
So many.
3 million people
every episode.
No, but what's that transition like? I mean, are there times where you like, you feel like you want to hide or like you regret the decision, or is it not anything for you to worry about?
I don't really regret it. It was a little weird. I mean, I think I've said this before. Jason and I have talked about it on our show, and every once in a while we'll do something together, and we've talked about it then. I mean, in terms of me even being on the show, he like sort of forced me to do it. Like I said no at first because I thought we were going to have to do everything in person. And I was like, dude, I can't fly to do every single episode. That is not like a realistic thing. And then we're like, let's try it and we'll figure it out. And then Zoom basically came about and it became a blessing. I always knew, like, he and I, we always kind of worked together on it, and we sort of built the thing out together. And so it was always a thing that I wanted to be a part of. And I feel like even if I wasn't on the show, I would be involved, you know, in the company. We probably would have done the company probably would have gone the same route, you know, even if I wasn't a co-host. I think the thing which I enjoy about it, and hopefully we can keep, and I think you guys have this as well, is we've created the show as just like, you know, it's very casual. It's very much, you know, conversations. And then even when we do things like the draft and stuff like that, that are more like bits, like they don't feel, nothing feels forced. And if it felt like we were doing it and it felt like we were like performing or something like that, I'm not sure that that's what I would want to do. I don't think that's what JJ would want to do either. I think that the second it starts to feel unnatural is when the audience can tell that it feels that way. And honestly, like that's a thing with guests too. It's like they come, the players like coming on the show, our show and your show, because they feel like people can, like you guys relate to them. We relate to them. We can have a conversation with them the same way that like we would have if we were at dinner with them or something like that. And like that was the most important thing, I think, for us when we started doing it, was like creating that. It took, I mean, it didn't honestly, I don't think, you can ask JJ this question because he's a better person to answer. I don't think it took me that long to like figure out how to do it, because I'd been around a lot of these people already. And so it was more just like, okay. And like you've done this in your shoots as well. Like we do, like when we tape with Jimmy and Duncan in New Orleans, it's like you got like one camera in there and an engineer. You know, it's not like it's like some crazy shoot that has like all kinds of lights and da-da-da and all this stuff where all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I'm on the big stage now. It's like you don't even notice the people are there.
Tommy, we use an iPhone. just for the record, when we do our shoots.
You guys use an iPhone for your massively viral video we've seen all over the world.
We use an iPhone and the room lighting. We find a nice, well-lit room, preferably some sunlight peeking through the window.
This is what's cool. This is what I find to be – this is what I'm, like, excited about with, like, this field in general, and I find to be just, like, awesome in its own right is, like – and I'm not even just gassing you guys up, like – when you have Jimmy on, when you have Bam on, when you do the thing you did, when you had UD on, like that is like proprietary content. Like nobody else has that. And you're doing it on an iPhone. Like you don't need to like call ESPN and be like, hey, get this crew here and get some exec to be like, I like Duncan. Like I don't like the other guy. Like, da da da. Like you don't need any of that shit. Like you can do it. And then we put it on YouTube and we put it on these audio platforms. And this, and to Davis's point, a lot of people engage with it. Maybe not millions, but like a lot of people engage with it. And you basically just cut everybody else out and then you add them in if you need them. And that's basically what I find to be like exciting about this is you're never going to be in a place where you need those people. Like you only will need them if you want them, but you're not going to need them otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, you make a great point. I think the comfortability of our guests, and I think I feel that too, especially in person. I think Zoom is its own thing, but like we've realized when we've been able to get in person with people, you're able to talk about things in a way that you're just never going to get in your traditional, you know, media interview. But I've also noticed, like, when I look back on some of the things that I've said on this podcast, like it's a dangerous line because I've realized that I've said some things and nothing like damning or like, you know, that would ruin my
character. Like JJ. Yeah, you don't like pop off like JJ does. Yeah,
no, I'm not going reckless.
Let's wait 2 years.
By the way, an all-time moment on any podcast ever is the JJ Redick monologue on the front office of the New Orleans Pelicans. That's up there. You know, it's in the Hall of Fame. Anyways, like, but I've realized after the fact, like when we're done recording, being like, damn, like maybe I shouldn't have said that. Like that's kind of like a line, especially when, you know, because it's unique. And I ran into, not to, you know, pat myself on the back here, but I ran into Dave Portnoy recently, and he was talking about some of the guys that he does, athletes that he, you know, hosts podcasts for. And his whole take is like, it's kind of impossible to have a great podcast when you're a current athlete, which I'll push back on because I think both of our podcasts are great, but you always have to be cognizant of like you still have a reputation that you need to worry about because you're still playing.
Yeah.
Whereas like you see the guys on All the Smoke, they're able to just say whatever they want. So we have a unique perspective, both of our shows, but there's also like strategically, we need to learn how to strategically navigate it, and it's not necessarily an easy thing to do.
But don't you think, I mean, I would definitely push back on Dave's thing. I would say that.
So would I. And I did, for the record.
Yeah. The other counter to that is, you know, the relevance of you talking about your contract or you talking about your playoff series or you talking about whatever, you talking about other guys in the league supersedes anything that, you know, a lot of former players do. And some of them are, you know, great analysts and everything like that. So it's not like that. It's not like that content doesn't work. It's more just that you just realize like fans want to hear from you on this stuff. Like if you're Duncan Robinson who can eloquently speak about what's happening with the Heat, why would you want to hear from somebody in Bristol about this when you can just hear you talk about it? It's not that you have to like shut that stuff out, but like, I'm just thinking objectively, I would rather hear from you. And so that's
for sure.
To Dave's point, though, I think, and we were saying this earlier, the tricky thing is like there's not a lot of Duncans out there. You know what I mean? There's not necessarily a lot of JJs out there. There's not a lot of people out there that can thread this line and also have the ability to do it. And so with current guys, I mean, with former guys, people, you know, they get more comfortable over time. So there is an element of like, you know, you're Duncan special. He should be patting himself on the back. I feel like that's...
Well, it's not just Heat stuff too. I mean, if JJ is talking about the Heat, that's still interesting because he's in it. And so it's a much more intimate thing. Duncan can talk about anything going on around the league, and the guys on All the Smoke or Knuckleheads or these other guys, they do amazing jobs. You know, they're analysts too, but it's just more intimate when it's coming from somebody who's still currently in locker rooms.
To your point, I was going to say, you are right. You guys, I don't know if you guys have gotten nailed with this yet, but we definitely get nailed with it. You got to be careful about like throwaway lines and stuff like that, because people do listen to the show and they clip out the show. And like, I'm not even going to bring up the specific example, but we had a thing a couple weeks ago that was like not meant to like cause news. It was just like, it was in a mailbag and it was just a thing and it's a factual thing. And all of a sudden it's like, there's like 2 weeks of headlines about it. And we're just like, we didn't even regret it, but we're just, what I find funny sometimes is just like, it's like people say they want candor and they want honesty. And then when they get it, they're like, oh my God, like, why are you being so honest? You know, like it's like, almost like they want to be like fed cliches sometimes.
Do you find that pressure, Tommy? Cause I think it's one thing if it's coming from JJ or if it's coming from Duncan. But do you ever feel a need of like, oh, if I have a hot take, that might reflect poorly on JJ?
No, I don't worry about, I mean, I'm smart about what I say to not put him in a weird spot. I just don't like, I don't mind other people being hot takey. I don't like it for myself. And I think it comes off really goofy when it's me and there's two NBA players there and I'm giving my takes about like,
right,
who is like the best player in this, and then they're like, dude, like, what the fuck do you know?
Right.
That's why I'm like, just keep it moving. And like, if JJ specifically asks my opinion, or if like a guest specifically asks my opinion on it, I'm not going to be like shy. But like we got into this the other day and they were like busting my balls because I was saying I liked the moves the Bulls made, and they did too. Like, they obviously, JJ and Lonzo are really tight, and DeMar has been on the show and everything like that. But all I said was like, I like the moves the Bulls made because I do. And they all agreed that they were good. So it wasn't even like they were disagreeing with me. They were just like, well, thank you for that analysis. So then
I'm like, no, it's all right, I'm going to just like insight.
Yeah. I'm just going to stick in the back. Like, I'll call when I get called on, I'll chime in. Otherwise I'll just stick to like asking questions.
Well, not on this episode. I want a Tommy hot take. So I'm just going to ask a poignant question here. You've spent a lot of time around the Philadelphia 76ers organization. Obviously, JJ was there for a while. I think when you started working on the podcast, he was in Philly.
He was in Philly. Yeah, that's when it started at the Ringer.
Give me some thoughts on that situation. And I'm going to leave it somewhat open-ended, but do you think that it's salvageable as is? Because everybody wants to know.
I don't know what Tommy Alter thinks of the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't know what salvageable is. I will just say this. We've talked about this. We talked about this with TJ. We talked about it with somebody else this summer. Ben is such a unique talent, and he's so good at creating open looks for his teammates. Like, Duncan, if you played with him, I don't know what you would shoot a lot of threes and you would make a lot of threes. You have a lot of open looks, and it's not always appreciated. But I know that it was a thing that worked. I mean, JJ had two really good like statistical years there. He scored basically 20 points a game and shot, you know, 40% at like a high clip. And that he was playing well, and Joel was a part of that. But a lot of that has also been, it was like Marco shot really well there. Ilyasova was there for a little bit, shot really well. Seth had a great year this year. Like, he makes shooters better, and he does a lot of things. And so, I mean, I basically think, I don't know what's going to happen. I think wherever he goes next, I think he will go somewhere. I don't think he's going to stay there. I think wherever he goes next, he will be a really good player. And I'm not sure that they will regret it. But it's not like we have not heard the last of, you know, Ben Simmons by any stretch. And I just think that I saw the stuff that Joel was tweeting today. And I do think that sometimes the media does take stuff, and, you know, and I guess we are the media too, but they'll take little tidbits of things and just run with it. And these guys, like, Ben hasn't, you know, he hasn't said anything, he hasn't talked, and it's not always, It's what you sign up for. So I don't think anyone needs to feel sorry for any of these guys, but like, it's not always fair where these kind of things get built into these massive feuds when there's, you know, there's not necessarily a lot there.
I agree. I think Ben is incredibly underappreciated as a player. Obviously defensively, I think he does get the respect he deserves, but offensively, I always have kind of envisioned that if he was in a situation where kind of like a James Harden in Houston, where like he just had an open floor surrounded by shooting and could really create. I mean, he's an incredible passer. I think he would, there would be just an entirely different perception of him across the league. Obviously, everyone's always going to get caught up in how many threes he shoots, which is like kind of silly, but it's also the kind of the world that we live in. Love that take. I got one more Tommy hot take.
I like this segment. Maybe I'll just get my hot takes on your show.
Yes.
Is JJ Redick wearing an NBA jersey this year? I was going to ask him, but he was not on this podcast.
Definitely. I think you guys know this. I think your audience knows this. Our audience definitely knows this. JJ is very candid, sometimes too candid. And if he was not playing, he would have just said it. Like he would have said it. It would not be a thing he's being shy about. I mean, we talked about this a little bit, on the show and everything like that. He has a bunch of options now. He had a bunch of options in August, and he'll have a bunch of options whenever he decides to do it. I think he's just taking his time with it, which is unique for sure. But I also think, you know, he's been in the league for a long time and he's built up a lot of credibility with different people around the league and everything like that. And it's not necessarily an unusual, thing to happen this way. I think we both are just like, he's going to decide when he decides and then we'll do something on the show, but we're not going to make it like a big dog and pony show. You know what I mean? It's going to be like, all right, he has to get his heel right. And then once that happens, he's basically like, I'm going to play here. And then there will be, if he's not playing, he will tell you and you will know on the show, but there's nothing that has, nothing has changed as of now. That wasn't even a hot take. That was just like fishing for gossip.
Yeah, right. Kind of a dirty, dirty question.
Yeah, fucking cheap shot. I didn't realize this is this kind of show. Rethinking everything.
Because JJ bailed, we're stealing his draft, or your draft concept. Yeah. We were going to do it with him, but now we're going to do it without him.
We need Davis to come draft on our show, by the way. I can't believe that hasn't happened.
It's true. Davis, this is your first ever draft.
That's true. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Davis is probably really good at drafting. We'll see. Like, JJ has actually fallen off significantly draft-wise. Like, he likes to make fun of me, but I don't know what his issue is, but the last, 3 months, he's just been tanking them, and either I've been winning or the guests have been winning. But I feel like Davis would just do a ton of prep and would come in. The other person who's really good at drafting is Tyrese. Shockingly good. Like, he comes with these like deep cuts and we're like, dude, you're like 20 years old. Like, I don't even know how you know about this thing.
We wouldn't know because we can't get Tyrese on the show. We've tried.
Right.
And yes, Tyrese, this is me calling you out. We've tried multiple times and he's bailed multiple times. anyways, I digress. All right. I'm with two of the best sidekicks in the game, and that sounds demeaning calling you two sidekicks, but the concept topic for this draft is best sidekicks. So let's just get it popping here. Tommy, why don't you go first?
Okay. Thank you for the heads up on the topic.
Well, wait,
didn't really give you much. Sidekicks in any form.
Okay.
Legitimately any form.
So it's not just movies or TV.
No, I would actually prefer it. I would actually prefer it if you really stretched it. Like, you just came with some.
Are we doing five? Are we snaking it? What's the format?
We'll do five and we'll snake it.
Okay.
I'll go last.
So this is a weird first pick, but I love the show so much that I'm not saying that like he's somebody I would want to hang out with, but I think the overall the acting, the character, what it represents is one of the best, maybe the best television sidekick in the history of TV. And that's Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad.
Wow.
Okay. Whoa.
Great answer.
Here we go.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. Actually, quick anecdote. My grandparents
Deals meth on the side.
Yeah. Quick anecdote. I also am selling meth. No. Our grandparents, for their latest anniversary, we got them like a book of activities to do together. And one of which, for some reason, was watch Breaking Bad. And so they have started the show. My grandpa loves it. My grandma's not as big of a fan. Too much foul language for her. But we'll see. They're just a couple episodes in, so maybe it'll grow on them.
It's not for everybody, but it's if you like it, you really like it.
Wait, can we just acknowledge the fact, outside of your family, how is that anecdote relevant to anybody that could be listening to this podcast?
Like, I thought it was important to share.
What
provided color to his family. I think that's fine.
What made you motivated to share that anecdote? I'm actually genuinely curious.
I thought
it was... Is your grandma going to be pissed at you for blowing up her spot?
She listens every week. I just thought it was worth...
Okay. Like, I love the show.
All right, Dave. What's your second pick? Second overall pick. What do we got?
I'm going... I think this is our show, so we're going to make the rules. I'm going to say this is allowed. I'm going to duo. I'm going Timon and Pumbaa. Lion King, top three movie all time for me.
I have questions about that pick. One of them sidekicks? I thought there was one side.
One person. They are Simba's sidekicks.
But you have to pick one of them.
No. We're doing best sidekicks. They as a tandem are sidekicks to Simba.
I'm going to let it slide.
It's like our background singers considered sidekicks?
Yeah, like...
I guess
like
so.
Like, is J.C. Chazé and those guys, Lance Bass, are they typically sidekicks?
Yeah, I think so.
I hate that answer. I'll let it slide just for the...
Questionable. I love those guys, but...
I'm not going to fight it from a time standpoint because we're running out of time.
If you made me pick one, I'm going Timon, but I think as a duo, they are inseparable. And they help Simba relax when he needs to. They help shift his perspective, but then they're there to ride for him in battle when needed. Like, what else can you ask for?
I mean, it's fine. I'm gonna answer. So I got two here coming up. My first one is just, you know, fastball right down the middle, Scottie Pippen. Okay, I mean, it's hard to argue he's not one of the best. My second one.
Do not let him hear that. He's not gonna be happy. Scottie will not be on this show.
That's a good point. My second one is Baxter the dog from Anchorman. I think he plays an unbelievable role to Ron.
Yeah.
I think he adds a emotional side. Not obviously Ron already has one, but I think he adds a human element to Ron. I think he just plays the role beautifully. And then after, you know, getting punted off the bridge, he makes his heroic return at the end and saves the day. I think Baxter Burgundy is my second pick, and I think it's a great one.
That's a good pick. Very, very good pick.
That's such a unique answer. I would have never, but I agree. I think it's a good pick. Well done.
Back to you, Dave.
All right. I typed up we had a head start on Tommy on this one, so I typed up a little bit of a list here. I'm looking through it. There are a couple good ones. I think I'm going to go Donkey from Shrek, though.
Yeah,
that's a good answer.
It just seems kind of like a classic. It's early enough in the draft where it's like, you know, I want him there. So
you're really staying in the animated movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah. I mean, you could get deducted points for lack of, you know, creativity. But go ahead.
We'll see.
I'm going to go with my second pick. I'm going to go with Wilson the Volleyball from Castaway.
Nice. Wow,
that's a great one.
I feel like that's a kind of unimpeachable sidekick. third, I got to think. I want to do a basketball one, but so a guy that, like, unlike Scotty, I think would be fine being considered a sidekick, who I just loved watching play was Manu with those Spurs teams. So I'm going to go with Ginobili as my sidekick for Duncan, obviously, on those championship teams, because he sort of served the role of like a basketball sidekick. And it was that he was obviously didn't start. He was just always there when they needed him. And he was always there to basically provide, you know, backup, color, support, everything like that, but had no interest in being the face of the franchise or anything like that. And so that like when I think about like basketball sidekicks, that fits more than, you know, you have three superstars and they take turns because all three of them will get pissed if they're considered not to be the man.
Right.
So it's like, you need to have someone who's like, okay, in that spot.
That's a great take. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I like that too. Wow, okay.
You guys, I'm getting so much positive feedback. This is like so unique for me.
Yeah.
We did a draft yesterday with Shay Serrano and Mina Kimes. First of all, Shay was a horrible, horrible drafter. Like, so bad. But they're really good at just shitting on other, like there's a skill, like Gladwell's good at this too, at like, even when you're wrong, arguing somebody down, where like they're actually factually incorrect and they still win the argument because Shea's like amazing at it. Like, he's wrong on the thing and yet he convinces everybody that he's right. And you just are like, you feel like you're taking crazy pills.
I like it. No, I mean, it requires a certain level of persistence and will is really what it boils down to.
Yeah. All
right. Go ahead, Dave.
If I can go grandparents aside, Tommy, then you can go Shea Serrano aside. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm going to go. I mean, I'm looking at my board. You guys, I'm just going to keep taking the good stuff. I think animated. I have to go. This isn't animated. It's in a similar realm. I'm going to go Chewbacca. I mean, how is Chewbacca?
Is the demo of this show like 13-year-olds? Like, I don't even understand what's going on right now.
Your first opportunity to draft, and you are just, I don't want to say failing miserably, but my goodness.
This is 1 for 12.
Exactly. Like what audience are you trying to capture here? Like, who are you speaking to?
I think that's the point, is there's no audience here that I'm trying to capture. I'm picking things that are near to my heart.
He's trying to make his grandma happy after he called her out on his own podcast.
True. Like, yeah, that's obviously true too. No, come on. Star Wars is a classic. Are you kidding me?
All right. I got Turtle from Entourage. And the reason that I'm choosing Turtle is because, kind of not like my previous pick in Scottie Pippen, Turtle is so willing to be a sidekick. And I think that there is a strength in that. The strength of like having the self-awareness to just like really know your role and just sell out to it completely. And I think he just provides levity, which...
What's your feeling on that show now?
What's my feeling?
Yeah, did you watch all of it?
Oh, I mean, I probably watched Entourage through probably 5 or 6 times. I mean, it's, you know, it lacks definitely kind of like any sort of like depth. But if you don't think it's entertaining, then I don't know if we can really be friends. Because it's incredibly entertaining. I will say, like, it's very classic of like when you're in high school or maybe like early college, of it just so perfectly fits into like, oh, if I made it big, this is what it would look like. And like, just anybody can kind of just like put themselves into that role of Vince.
And now you're Vince. Now you've got an entourage.
I'm not Vince. So we like kind of talk about that. And I consistently dispute the fact I don't want to be Vince. That's not my role.
You're Vince,
I don't
of Miami. Be Vince. This is, Duncan's Vince. So who's, I'm not Vince. Of course. Davis is E. I don't think I've met your turtle yet.
Turtle could be taken in a few different directions.
Yeah, I was going to say. Turtle has such a career or a character arc that it kind of really depends at what point of, you know, which turtle are you looking for?
You know, yeah. JJ was supposed to be in that show and he bailed on it.
Oh, wow. What a missed opportunity.
Because JJ at Duke, you guys might be too young. JJ at Duke was like most famous college player in the country, and they were just being like, and that was when that show was hot, and they were like, you come out and be in it, da da da, and he's just like, I'm good.
One Tree Hill,
he wanted to be in, but the schedule got fucked up, which actually would have been hilarious because we would play that clip over and over again if he was in that.
That feels
like a missed opportunity.
That would be two incredible cameos if JJ was in either of those.
We gotta get Duncan. We gotta get Duncan in a show. Show are we gonna get Duncan? No, we should get you in. So we had Adam McKay on the podcast, like 4 months ago. He's making a show about the Showtime Lakers.
That's right.
For HBO. We already got him to agree that JJ could be in it as like a third, like bench guy on the Celtics or something like that. I don't know if it's going to work out with your season, but it would just be like, we need like, because you're not going to like act. You don't have to like act. You can just be like a guy who just like hits a couple threes. And then everyone's like, is that Duncan?
Well, I could do that. All right. I get another pick here, don't I?
Yeah.
A little bit of pandering, but, you know, I really get to see the behind the scenes. And that's why I'm with my fourth selection. I'm taking Davis Patrick Reed.
Oh God!
As best sidekick. I mean, the guy what does the an inordinate no. amount of heavy lifting behind the
this
scenes.
You guys are so fucking corny. Oh my!
Yeah, that was bad. I didn't like that.
I have to do it. It's what listen. He's an incredible sidekick. It's
I didn't like.
You
that.
Better put a graphic up on this on Twitter like we do, and have everyone shit on these picks. That is insane.
Wait, I've had fantastic picks up until this point. Davis is my one that you could maybe dispute, but the other ones have been fantastic.
That. That made me, I actually physically feel pain after that.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable.
Seriously.
All right, Dave, go ahead.
All right, I'm not switching gears because of you two. I just want to let you guys know that. This is just, I'm going down my board. But I'm going Chris Bosch because that guy was the perfect sidekick in the big three. Took a little bit of a lesser role, but got the job done. Stepped up when he needed to. I'm also pandering to our Heat fans a little bit. But Chris Bosch is my fourth pick.
I like that. Chris
is quality.
Yep. All right. I got two.
Yeah.
I'm going – I don't remember his name, but you guys ever see Bad Santa?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the little guy.
Wait, who's in Bad Santa again?
It's Billy Bob Thornton, and then he has his elf. I'm going with that elf, whatever his name is. That dude is hilarious.
We'll get a name search for that for the graphic.
Yeah, if everyone knows, if you've seen the movie, you know who I'm talking about.
That's a good take. All right, fair enough. Right. I mean, I don't love it if we're being honest. I think you should at least be able to come to the table with a name instead of like a vague description.
I know, it would be nice. Maybe I could have come with it if I had any warning that we were drafting this topic.
Fair enough.
Maybe even a 9-second heads up so I could have Googled this guy's name. But fair you know enough. What? I just go no notes and I just draft it out. This is like shooting.
Fair.
Just fucking whip it off. All right. My last one. Have you guys seen Sopranos?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, I'm going Paulie. Paulie's my favorite character on that show. Paulie Walnuts. What makes him a good sidekick is, unlike all of the other sort of key figures in the show, he has no interest in being Tony. He has no interest in being the boss. He has no interest in any sort of real power or anything like that. All he cares about basically is his mom, who ends up not being his mom, spoilers, and making Tony happy. And so he's really ultimately like the best sidekick on the show because he doesn't have any aspirations of grandeur.
It's hard to argue anything Sopranos, I'll be honest with you. And I appreciate your description.
Has anyone said Robin?
No.
Like it's almost...
I don't like... I mean, you can take
Robin's
it.
Robin's like lame. Like, if you want to pick Robin, fine.
I mean, he's literally become the term when talking about sidekicks. It's like, he's the Robin.
I don't even know what Robin looks like. Didn't they get Robin out of all the movies because he was just
Robin was never there.
I just think
like, Robin's not in The Dark Knight.
If we're talking cultural impact, I don't understand how Robin's not a first-round pick. Like, literally his name has become the coinage
for... Does Robin have cultural impact, though? If somebody who's played Robin in one of the movies was walking down the street, would you be like, oh my God, that's Robin?
I mean, yeah,
but you mean the character description of like what he has become.
He is literally the coinage for the word sidekick. So I'm going Robin. I mean, it just feels like if we're talking value in the fifth
round. People are probably
going
to like that pick. Yeah, I think that's good value in the fifth round.
I mean, it's
I have the best.
Getting Robin in the fifth round is...
I get that it's like become the cool thing here to just make fun of my draft, but I think if you look at the board, there's no question that I have the most solid five.
I mean, Davis, you have a better draft than fucking Duncan. He picked you.
Right, exactly.
Hold on. Wait for my fifth pick. This is probably my best one yet, even though I think Baxter Burgundy was my best one. If we're talking cultural impact, you would be hard-pressed to find a movie that was more impactful than Like Mike. And that's why I have Murph from Like Mike. Bow Wow's sidekick, Murph.
Great movie.
Think about it. The whole ending to the movie is broken if Murph doesn't pitch the shoes ahead at the end. And he's just like as solid as they come right from the jump. And they end up, you know, both getting adopted together. And they can, you know, continue to be each other's sidekicks for the rest of time. That's my take to round it out.
That's a good one to close it on.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, so there you have it. I mean, we'll let the people decide. I think that the proof is in the pudding on a handful of those.
I honestly thought Duncan had a good chance till the, you know, the infamous one.
So I didn't even like it. And it was
Tommy, here's the thing. This is why I said it's a little bit of pandering. For some reason, our community, I was almost said fan base. They're not fans. They're our peers. Good. They love Davis. They're just enamored by everything.
That's
Davis.
Hilarious. That's funny because it's the opposite with us.
You go.
I mean, I don't think that they hate me, but I think that like they like because JJ and I always fight. This is the funny thing about our JJ and my relationship. We never fight in real life, but on the show we just always go at it on different stuff. And so they like it's more like the kids on the schoolyard, and JJ's like the bigger kid, and they're like, yeah, like get him, da, da, da. But it's good. It's like good content. So like I'm down with it.
I still don't even understand it. Like Davis had this ridiculous little like hat shtick. I don't even know if you saw it on like visually for every one of our questions in the mailbag. He would like change hats, and I'm like, Davis, this is the dumbest idea I've ever seen. Like this is ridiculous, and people are just Davis is so like people are just loving it in the comments, and I'm like, that was a great like test of where people really stand on Dave.
Are into it,
yeah, because if they didn't like Dave, they'd be like, who is this jamoke who's
why
just like
changed,
yeah, like what the fuck is he doing? But no, everyone's like eating it up, like, oh, this is art. Davis is such a, you know, special individual in mind and creative. It's a joke.
Shout out to my people. Hey, shout out to the long shot community.
I like it.
My ride or die.
Now I'm all worked up. Anyways, Tommy, we really appreciate you coming on. We went a little bit longer than we anticipated, so sorry if we kept you a little bit. But thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom and perspective.
Thank you
for
having me, and thank you for continuing this meteoric rise of this show. I feel like this thing is I'm going to come back on in 4 months, and we're going to be like. Davis is gonna have security outside of his house.
we talk about it every week. We're just out here chasing Rogan. So
yeah, this is what happens.
You know, it's within the sights.
Next one of these, when JJ decides to show up, we're doing it in person. We are gonna come down to Miami, and that's when we'll do it. We will do
100%.
We'll do a big one in person at Kiyu.
Q, dude. Come on, Q, dude.
I've been there one time. It's spelled Q.
Elite.
I know, that's like personal to me because of like how embedded I am into that establishment.
I would say it's one of the best. It is. I was saying to Hassan, who Duncan's going to see, who's going down to Miami. I told him it's the best. Maybe a top five restaurant for me in the country, and I've been there one time.
Whoa, I love
it's amazing.
Take.
Tommy, amazing.
I love that take from you, and I'll stand right there next to you when you say it.
It's amazing.
I
yes.
All right. Appreciate you coming on the long shot, and yeah, obviously check out Old Man and the Three. You probably already do if you listen to us. But thanks again, Tommy.